Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 3 of The Music Buzz. My name is Lauren Brumley.
And I'm Justine Avila, and we are back.
We're back. This is the podcast, if you didn't know, where we get buzzed and talk about the music biz and pop culture and current events. And
we also dissect albums.
Yeah, we're your place to come when you just want to hang out with your two gal pals who are breaking down the most iconic records and talking about the evolution of our favorite artists.
But today we have a really special episode with one of our favorite, dare I say, female artists.
We do. So it is Black History Month, and in honor of that, for this deep dive, we felt like there was truly only one.
And we have a teaser, which let us tell you what we're drinking, and maybe you can guess.
Oh, I love a little mystery moment.
All right, Lauren, you made the cocktail, so you're going to have to break down what it is and tell the people what the name of this cocktail is.
Okay, so today we're drinking a cocktail called Bee's Knees, and it is gin, honey syrup, and lemon juice.
It's literally deliciousness in a cup. It feels also like one of those healthy shots you get when you get like a juice.
It totally does.
And you're just like, oh, this is like super healthy. You have the alcohol in it that kills everything on the way down. So yeah. You're fine.
Oh my God. So true. This is basically a fresh pressed juice.
That's exactly right.
Wow. I feel way better about drinking it now.
Me too. This is essentially, guys, if you don't get the vaccine in time, make one of these.
Totally. It's like an immune booster.
Exactly. but that was your hint in the title. So
it honestly, I didn't even realize how perfectly it goes with this because it's twofold. So we've got the bees and lemons. We're talking about Beyonce's iconic record, Lemonade.
Which it kind of has no words to describe it, even though we're going to summon the words.
Yeah, like Lemonade has become just a staple in pop culture. The way that it was released, the songs on it, the quotable moments, lemonading became a verb. It's an iconic pop culture moment.
I feel like it also gave rise to her fan club, like the Beehive. I knew that they were powerful before, but man, when we dive into kind of the affair and everything else that happens on this record, that's when I learned how powerful the Beehive was.
Oh, I mean, talking about standums, like Beyonce has one of the most powerful standums. I mean, I know that we talk about the Swifties a lot, and the Swifties are definitely a powerful standum, but like the Beehive might beat them.
They're awesome and scary at the same time.
As any standum really is.
But Lo, this was hailed as the album of the century by one music critic. I think before we jump into it, we should talk a little bit probably about where Beyonce was, where the inspiration for this album came from, everything leading up to it, because it seemed like when she released this, it was like a content bomb. It was like, okay, Beyonce's here, Beyonce's there. You have a visual album. You have the singles being released. It was everywhere you turn, there was Beyonce.
So just to give you a little context of where Beyonce was, Beyonce in 2013 had released her self-titled record, which was her fifth record. And it was a surprise.
It was like an overnight drop. Like at midnight, the record released and it was to no press, I don't think. Like she didn't get anyone a heads up and it was like, here's the record. Boom.
Yeah. I can't think of any artist who had done that that I'm aware of.
Not before.
Not at her level, at least.
Yeah, not before. I would say the closest one we have most recently is Taylor. Like, hey, I'm going to release an album Friday.
Yeah, I think Beyonce like really set the tone for like, what artists can do with these surprise releases. And so she released her self-titled record in 2013, which gave us her singles EXO, Drunk in Love, which is huge. Like, I mean, one of the most massive songs ever. Partition, huge. Mm-hmm. Flawless, huge. So Beyonce was already a megastar at this point.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and that was the whole argument with that album was, oh, she's going to come in with no lead up marketing. Essentially, she was saying an F you to the marketing plan.
And like, she doesn't have to.
Exactly. And here's my marketing plan. Boom. Drops the album.
Yeah. And like with a surprise record, you don't need to market it because it markets itself because it's like that's what's newsworthy, is that there is an album, period.
Right. Exactly.
What were your personal feelings on Beyoncé up to this point, like up through the self-titled record? Were you like a stan? Were you like a casual fan? Not a fan?
I would say that I was definitely not a stan, but I was a casual fan. I listen to her music, love her music, but it's not like I have to be on the computer every time Beyoncé does something or says something. And I honestly hadn't seen her in person yet to perform a show. So I guess you'd call that a very casual fan.
Yeah, I've never seen her live.
Oh, you're not even a fan.
I know. Like, what even am I?
Yeah.
I was a Destiny's Child stan.
Well, okay. I didn't know that was it. Yeah. If that's in the cards, then for sure. That was the soundtrack of my youth.
I mean, yeah, of course. But I gotta be honest. Like, I was always kind of a Kelly Rowland girly.
Wow.
Don't crucify me. I just...
Wow.
I loved B and Michelle also. But, like, I always was just like, Kelly's so cool. Like, I love her voice. You know? She just has, like, a vibe about her.
No, I was, see, in Destiny's Child, I was a Beyoncé fan because I was like, oh, she's the leader of the pack.
Yeah, I mean, she was obviously the leader.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, the main focus of the group. She was always in the middle of the photos, wearing the cutest outfit.
And sometimes she'd be the only one in the photo. No offense. No offense. But she would be.
No, but I was kind of the same. I was a casual fan. I wasn't a super fan by any means. I was like, there were certain songs of hers that I absolutely loved, like Me, Myself, and I. I mean, used to vibe hard to that. But I was never a stan.
Right.
I always kind of felt like her music was so great, but it wasn't for me. Like, right. I'm like, she didn't write and create this music for me, which is maybe why I don't resonate with it. Is it because
she didn't do sad songs?
Yeah, probably. Me, Myself, and I is a sad song. So maybe that's why I'm like, oh, that's the one. No, I liked her. I mean, I liked a lot of her upbeat, like, bops, but yeah, I don't know. I just, like, I liked her. That was where I was at.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
Like, in some of them too, like when she broke out as a solo artist, I'm thinking of the song, like, to the left, everything yeah. you love in a box to the left, that one, you know what I'm talking about?
Irreplaceable.
Yes.
I had to sing through the chorus in my head to get to that.
It was fine, but, like, I was like, this is, like, meh. And then,
see, I loved that.
No,
but it was sad.
Yeah, it was sad. And then she came back and was like, boom, I'm Beyoncé. And I was like, oh, there she is. There's the leader of Destiny's Child that, like, we know
and
love.
There's my girl.
Yeah. Missed you. Missed you, boo. She was a superstar at that time. And still is, obviously. But that was in 2013. So.
Well, and then in her personal life, she'd obviously, I mean, this was her fifth record as a solo artist.
Mm-hmm.
She married Jay-Z in 2008. So, like, that rose both of their stars as, like, a power couple.
Yeah, they were babies.
Yeah. And, like, they both were such big stars that, like, when they were together, they both got even more famous because, as a combo, they were just even bigger. Really, the entire Lemonade journey starts in 2014 with what we all know as the elevator incident. So, after the 2014 Met Gala, this elevator footage was leaked, I think, to TMZ.
Yes, that is correct. It
I
was
mean,
to
how
TMZ.
Do they get everything? I don't understand.
Someone must have been paid a lot of money because security footage in a hotel isn't, like, live streamed online.
Yeah. The footage that came out was super, it was black and white and so grainy. Like, I'm surprised people could, like, even really figure out what was going on. Now that I have context of what's happening, I, like, obviously can see it. But if I were just watching that randomly, I'd be like, what is happening? Jay-Z, Beyoncé, and Solange walk into the elevator, and Solange immediately just starts going after Jay-Z.
There's a bodyguard in the elevator
yes,
as well.
Yes.
That's important.
She starts going after him. She's screaming, yelling in his face, and then it just escalates to the point where she's punching him, trying to kick at him, and eventually the bodyguard steps in and kind of grabs her. But this whole time, while she's attacking him, Jay-Z is just kind of blocking the attacks but not pushing her away, not being aggressive at all. Like, he's just kind of taking it, honestly.
Yes. And meanwhile, his wife Beyoncé is at the other side of the elevator, just taking it all in. Just,
she's just standing there.
Yeah, like, she is watching and probably, like, dying to get out of the elevator at that point.
Yeah, but from all this context, everyone is like, what is happening. Why is she mad at him? Why is Beyonce not doing anything? Why is he not defending himself? So you kind of, a lot of rumors were going around, and they didn't speak about it.
Well, I was about to say, they didn't address it, and this video was in the tabloids for weeks. It wasn't like, oh, a hot video dropped, and then, you know, the publicist comes out, and they, like, come out holding hands, apologizing, blah, blah, blah. It was like, no, they didn't address a single thing, and all I could see was the video replaying on every person's website.
Yeah, and it was, like, the mystery of the century. Like, everyone was obsessed with knowing, what is the context? Like, what was Solange saying to Jay-Z? It still haunts me to this day.
Oh, I want to know. You know there has to be audio somewhere.
Somebody hit me up with that track. I'm trying to hear it. I have to know. But so kind of the rumors that were going around is people were like, was it about money? Did Jay-Z cheat on Beyonce? Like, what? Did he say something mean to Solange? But if that was the case, then why wouldn't Beyonce be stepping in? So all these rumors are kind of going around. To me, watching Jay-Z, I'm like, he's not defending himself, which to me says that he knew that he kind of deserved that and was just kind of letting her get it out.
I'm with you on that.
And Beyonce was kind of like, I'm letting her do it because you deserve it.
Right. And I'm going to add, like, I think the rumor about the cheating just escalated, because why does your sister get so mad at your husband that she's, like, attacking him? I mean, even if it was a money thing, the both of them are very wealthy independently. So it can't be that big of a money thing. Like, it has to be something worse than money at a certain point for your sister essentially to launch at him in an elevator. So,
yeah. Well, and then after the incident, Beyonce and her sister Solange left in a car together, and Jay-Z left in a separate car. So everyone was like, there is trouble.
Trouble in paradise.
So that's kind of the event that just begins this whole journey. So
that was the event of 2014.
Oh, 100%. Which I forget what month the Met Gala is in, but according to several sources, Beyonce starts recording the songs for Lemonade in June of 2014 and is writing and recording through July 2015.
Yes, she essentially takes a year, but it's over the 2 years.
Yeah. And now that we're reflecting back on this record and knowing what the content is and what it's all about and what we assume she was going through in this time during 2014 and 2015, shortly after that event, it kind of gives context to what most likely was happening in the elevator, which was Solange standing up for her sister, probably recently finding out about the infidelity.
But here's my question. Before we dive into this album, do you think it was, like, discussed at, like, the Met Gala? Like, hey, by the way, this is happening, like, in my marriage. Like, you know what I mean? Because I feel like that's just something you don't address at a public event like that.
Here, I have a couple theories.
Okay.
And these
break them down for me.
These are based on absolutely nothing, except for just me speculating.
I mean, one thing, I hear there's an open bar at the Met Gala, so, like, alcohol fuels everything. So if there's something simmering, like...
Yeah. Well, here's my thought. My thought is maybe it involved a celebrity or someone who is, like, a fringe celebrity or, like, a fringe character in a celebrity's life, so that maybe at the Met Gala, that person was there. Or...
You know who the person is, right?
No.
Becky with the good hair?
Yeah, but who is that?
Rachel Roy, the creative director of Rock Aware.
Oh, so she could have been there.
She could have been there.
It's like a fashion-y event.
Yeah, but she started as, like, I think an intern, someone, like, not high up in the company, and had been with Jay-Z's company from the start and essentially rose the ranks to creative director. So... That, like, her Instagram account got attacked. Sorry, I thought you were, like, doing some buildup to it. And I was like, say Rachel.
No, I didn't know that. But that's, I'm assuming that's not been confirmed. That's speculation.
Right.
So maybe Rachel or whoever was there at the event, or someone who is close to Rachel was there and had, like, heard some rumors and pulled Solange aside and was like, girl, what is going on with B and J? Like, what's the scoop? And Solange is like, what do you mean? And she's like, oh, did you not know that he's been having an affair with Rachel or whomever for XYZ amount of time? And then Solange freaks out, tells B, they leave the Met, and all of this is born. It's possible.
So, according to the Googs, she was at the Met Gala in 2014 and took a picture with Solange. So that's what happened.
I am guys, shook.
We solve mysteries here.
I mean, meanwhile, probably like the Beehive is like, yeah, you guys are stupid. We've known this since 2015.
Yeah, they knew it in 2014 when that thing, when the video surfaced. But yeah, that's what happened.
I mean, I just Googled her and she's stunning. So, I mean, it makes sense. Is she Indian?
Yes. She's, I think, part Indian and part Dutch. But I mean, had worked for Jay-Z for a while. So I'm assuming
it's always the coworker. Don't you think?
She was a close collaborator. Jay-Z had another co-founder, one of his buddies, but still, yeah, not ideal that there's a photo of her and Solange in 2014. Okay. So that was apparently Solange yelled at Rachel at some point at the Met Gala. So
okay. Wow.
To everyone who was at the Met Gala in 2014, if you could just please call us, let us know what you saw inside.
Send in all evidence.
Yeah,
to
press is not allowed
pod.
In. So if you could just let us know, that'd be great.
I would die to go to the Met Gala. Like, the things that you must see. Because yeah, they can't take their phones inside the Gala.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, there's that rumor mill of like all of these celebrities, one that will remain nameless who likes to pretend she's an angel, is like a raging bee at the Met Gala being like, F off, get them out of my sight.
Uh-oh.
Kind of thing. But yeah. Anyway, so that's what went down.
So between 2014 and 2015, she's writing the songs for Lemonade, and I'm assuming probably starting to record. And according to some of her co-writers, she had the idea for the chapters of the visual album. So the chapters being intuition, denial, all of those, which you'll see at on the title card at the beginning of each of the individual songs portion of the video.
It's like the cycle of grief, but the cycle of an affair.
Yeah. And so like, we'll kind of get to that a little bit later, but she kind of had those themes in mind when writing, which I thought that was interesting. 'Cause then it's not like she had these songs already or just had the concept for just like generally releasing an album and made them fit into these places. Like, she wrote them for each of these themes.
Which she has described this album, and Jay-Z has gone on to describe his 444 album as like a form of therapy. So I feel like, in addition probably to the intensive couples therapy that they were going through, this help them get through it together and kind of relieve that pain almost in a weird way, but very publicly. But
I mean,
2 years after,
what's more cathartic than songwriting? You know, that's how you get out your feelings. That's how you like process emotions. So they just were lucky that they blessed us with the art that came out of it. The first thing that is released is a single in February of 2016, which is Formation,
which is just in time for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I was it the night before?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so she was already set to perform at the Super Bowl halftime show and releases a single the night before, which I feel like is something we always think about leading up to the Super Bowl. If one of those artists hasn't put out music in a while, we're like, are they going to drop something?
Which they usually do, because the Super Bowl is arguably the biggest stage in the world for them to get on.
Right.
So they do that. They release a single. A tour is often announced, which I think Beyonce's Formation tour was announced like the week after, you know, pending good management. It's usually lined up very well.
Yeah. And she wasn't even headlining the Super Bowl halftime show.
It was Coldplay, right?
Yeah. And everyone was pissed because, not pissed, but like Coldplay fans and anti-Beyonce people, which there were a lot of at this time, were mad because they were like, she wasn't even the headliner and she took over the show.
I mean, it's Beyonce. She did the song with them, right? Him for the Weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So she was out, but I think it's also funny to note, if you get a chance, you should Google image some of Beyonce's faces during the performance. Her publicist went on to try to remove all of them from the internet, but there's like these photos of her just dancing and making a goofy face, probably because she's trying to breathe and sing.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be taken down. She clearly didn't get all of them because they're still
up. They're so funny. They're hilarious photos. I mean, I feel bad if she really doesn't want them on the internet, but like, steer into it, girl. Like, they're funny. Like, the same way that Casey did with her Grammy's face.
Just make a pop socket out of them. We will buy them.
T-shirts.
We'll buy them.
So she blew away everyone with her performance. And 2 months later, on April 23rd, 2016, suddenly we were blessed with her sixth studio album, Lemonade.
Ooh, talk about making lemonade out of lemons.
I thought you were going to say making a splash on Tidal.
No, that also would have been good. Tidal needs to hire you for some marketing.
Right? Come on, Jay-Z.
But yes, she did make lemonade out of lemons of that situation. It was, I mean, kind of a surprise release, right? I mean, I would say not 100% because she like played Formation at the Super Bowl, all of that good stuff. You knew new music was coming.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect a visual album. Did you?
No, not at all. And I think people were expecting an album, but they were expecting an album announcement and then kind of a rollout. So the album was only released on Tidal. It was not released on any other streaming platforms until 3 years later.
Which we should also note, her husband, Jay-Z, owns Tidal.
Right.
So she was down to support. I mean, she probably has an ownership stake, so I don't want to discount that.
She was supporting herself for sure.
Yeah, but like, I mean, she's still ride or die with her boo-boo.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they like have such a prenup to where like if she were to divorce him after that, she'd still get like, you know.
Right.
Those dollar bills from this.
That 03
you know?
Bonnie and Clyde. She's like,
oh my
ooh.
God, what a slapper. Love that song too.
She's like that 2016 Bonnie and Clyde.
Yes. The last self-titled album we forgot to mention was also, she dropped a visual album along with that too.
She did.
Yeah. Which I didn't know until I was like researching this.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. Because it wasn't as big of a thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it had quite the rollout that this does. The visual, when we say visual album, essentially it's a, is it like an hour and 45 minutes or something like that?
Hers is an hour and 5 minutes because she cuts it. So you don't get every song in there. Okay. It's like her reading poems and then it's like a snippet of the song.
Right.
So it's not the full record.
So it's basically a string of music videos broken up with poems and these cinematic moments to kind of tell a story to coincide with the album.
Which she subdivided into seven different directors. So, like, for example, I think on one of them, her and Jay-Z worked with a director on a Ralph Lauren campaign. So they decided to use that director. Hmm. There was another, like, director that worked on a music video for Beyonce way back in 2013 or something like that. So they used her. So I think that they had directors from different aspects of their life that they had worked with, maybe not all in a music context, but they at least had some familiarity with them.
That's cool.
Which I think is also interesting. And as we dive into it, because for me, this album, each song sounded so incredibly different.
Yeah.
And each one had a different producer. It wasn't like one Beyonce produced the entire record, but she was a co-producer with someone else and it wasn't one cohesive sound or thought, even though she tied it together into different themes. So you come full circle, but it was an interesting way to go about it while having very different sounds.
Yeah, that's super well said. I agree with that. And I think she pulled co-writers in so many different genres that she was influenced by in different ways. And so you do get a lot of different flavors of genre on the record, but it, like you were saying, it all is like strung together with like a common thread.
And I was reading a little bit that I think the common theme for all of them, all of the producers and all of the writers was that Beyonce is so detailed. She's not one of those artists that comes into the studio and is like, okay, I'm gonna lay this vocal down real quick and like send me the track once it's done and I'll approve. It's like, no, she sits there and like picks apart every little piece. And they said that she rearranges in ways, at least for some of the producers, they were like, she essentially produces the track because she rearranges in ways that I would never think of to put, you know, a string chord here or something like that. And they were like, it's just super unique and inspiring to be in the studio with her in that way.
Totally. And I was reading through a lot of interviews with her co-writers and almost all of them specifically made note that she is super hands-on. And even though some of these songs, which we'll kind of talk about as we go through, some of these songs were written by other artists well before Beyoncé got her hands on them, but they were completely transformed to something else by the time it was a Beyoncé track, which is cool. And that really does say a lot about her as a songwriter. There's so many big songwriters like we talk about all the time that like show up in the room and they just kind of throw their name on it,
right?
Because they were there.
I know. It made me have like almost a new level of respect, especially in the pop space. And I'm stereotyping here, but it's like you hear about all of these artists and they're like, yeah, I just like went in and they'll send me the track once it's done. And they have a big famous like a Mark Ronson produce it. And that's it.
Yeah.
You know, they're not getting in the weeds of it.
This album, going back to like the themes of it, she had to have been so embarrassed after the whole elevator thing and all the rumors that followed that. And so this album is kind of like her reclaiming the narrative and choosing what story she wanted to tell from it.
Through her music.
Yeah.
I mean, which is the best way to do it, because if you give an interview, and this is my opinion, obviously, but if you give an interview, everyone's going to watch that like 60 minute segment.
Yeah.
But like, if you don't give the 60 minute segment and your segment is on your album, everyone's going to listen to it, whether they're a fan or not, because they just want to know.
Yeah. And in the 60 minute segment, you're going to pull out the bits and pieces that are enticing clips, mm-hmm. and like what sounds good,
right,
to like for people to latch on to. So this was her like legitimately telling the story from her point of view. The themes in the record are infidelity, forgiveness, but she also talks a lot about like black feminism and empowering women.
And like family drama, she addresses kind of her dad. And I don't think it's any lie that she has a bit of a publicly tumultuous relationship with her dad. She's very close with her mom, and her dad was her manager at one point, and he's
a dadager. It never ends well.
A momager or a dadager is not a good thing. They need to be your parent, not the adjur.
The adjur. Like Beyonce's mom always made the Destiny's Child costumes and stuff. Like that is a good role for you. You can have like a side role.
We like to call those fringe benefits. Like
exactly.
Do the costumes, do the merch. I mean, in Lady Gaga's case, mom runs a foundation. We love foundations.
Yes.
That is for mom and dad.
We love foundations. I'm quoting you on that.
Run
them. So in an interview with Elle, I just felt like this like kind of summed it up pretty well. In an interview with Elle, Beyoncé said, "I hope I can create art that helps people heal. Art that makes people feel proud of their struggle. Everyone experiences pain, but sometimes you need to be uncomfortable to transform." And I feel like a lot of the songs on this record are kind of uncomfortable. She's talking about things that like can be embarrassing or seem way too personal, but like that is how you heal. And I think she recognized that like my experience in having kind of a broken marriage or like having this situation, it's not unique to me. And like the pain that I'm feeling, like maybe if I can work through it in this public way, creating this art out of it can help other people too. And I love that.
And weirdly, I do want to add to that. I think that was obviously her word, so it's the perfect summation of it. But it's also her answer, because I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, you're preaching like black female power, but you're staying with him and he cheated on you. So why? And she addresses that as well in her album, which I think is also pertinent, because it's like, yeah, she, you know, she talks about it in a couple of songs that she fell in love and she still loves this person despite everything on paper saying she shouldn't.
Yeah.
Which I think is super important, because a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, again, you're the idol of femininity, but then look at what you're doing.
Yeah. And I don't know if I can word this correctly, but something that I never understood the first time I heard this record, like when it first came out, like there's a lot of imagery in the visual album of like slavery and a lot of like painful moments from like black history. And I was like, obviously she's a black woman, so these things are meaningful to her, but I don't get how it ties into these songs. And what I didn't understand is, which I still don't fully understand, but I like am starting to, is how like the history of how Black people have been treated in our country and like been enslaved and made to feel insignificant has like through generations passed down these traditions of like reacting in anger and reacting in certain ways that like have caused what they call generational curses. Because you notice like things that your parents did wrong or struggled with, like we take those on because like we were raised in houses where like they did certain things and like it is passed down. And so she's kind of talked a little bit about it, but it's like her thought process with this album is like recognizing how that history has affected her marriage and like her relationship and how they interact with each other. This was kind of her being like, how can I heal through this to fix that so that I don't just repeat things that have happened in other generations before me so that I fix it for my kids.
Right.
Like, I never thought about it as that deep of a thing.
I didn't either. And like, to be honest with you, I was also in the same boat and I don't think I even realized it until you just like broke it down for me. But I do remember when I first saw this album and or saw the visual part of this album on TV and I was like, I mean, I get it, but I just don't understand the link to Beyoncé's life.
Mm-hmm.
But tying it all together, that makes perfect sense. And even like going back and listening to it again, some of those like reoccurring themes that have probably been prevailed in Black culture, we're like, oh, okay, this makes sense. It's not like just Beyoncé had these problems. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
It's almost like common themes.
Exactly. Totally. Just like a couple more things before we get into the track by track breakdown. So in April 2016, I think she started the Formation tour.
That I think makes sense. Which is
pretty short after.
Yeah.
So she started the Formation tour, which was all stadiums. And then just to mention like some of the album's accomplishments in 2017, she was nominated for like several Grammys, including Song of the Year, Record of the Year, and Album of the Year.
Yep. And she lost a couple of those because our girl Adele released 25.
And I will never forget Adele's acceptance speech from that because Adele is like in the Beehive. Like yeah, number one.
I was about to say, Adele is actually the president of the Beehive. When she is not working on her own stuff, she's like, all right, guys, how are we going to support Bey?
I love her so much for that. But in her acceptance speech, she literally goes, the artist of my, as she's crying, she's weeping. The artist of my life is Beyoncé. The Lemonade album is just so monumental.
I mean, but it's got to also feel weird for her to sit there and be like, and then it just reminds me, and I know I've talked about it on another podcast, like Adele in an interview recounts the like first time she met Beyoncé and she was like, was it, I guess like talking to Jay-Z and Beyoncé at one time and Jay-Z turns to her and is like, excuse me, Adele, one second. Or Beyonce does. And she like goes to the corner and cries because she's like, Beyonce knows my name.
Oh my God. I mean, it's so fun. It's like, duh, she does. But
yeah, exactly. You're Adele. Right. But like
you're like, as big of a name as me at this point.
Right. But she had like a cry sesh in the corner because Beyonce and Jay-Z know who she is.
I mean, I would too, probably. Like, but it was so funny too because Beyonce's reaction was just as adorable as Adele's speech because Beyonce is just standing there like smiling with her hand on her chest. She's just like, oh, like my little Adele.
She's like, fan club press. You know, she's
like, I'm not even mad I lost. Like, I got mentioned right. In the acceptance speech.
She was definitely texting, like, her personal assistant to be like, let's get her some merch.
It totally. Oh, my God. I mean, we love. We stan. So, just in general, the Lemonade film brought us so many iconic Beyoncé looks.
Hang on. She did win 2 Grammys, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she won for Best Urban Contemporary Album and then Best Music Video Album.
I mean.
And I didn't realize this until I was like doing some research. She won a Peabody Award for the album, which I guess was started by this wealthy American businessman and philanthropist, but it's to honor the most powerful and enlightening and invigorating stories in television, radio, and online media. So it's kind of like a big deal to win one.
That's cool. I didn't know that. So the Lemonade film premiered on HBO. Actually, which I think we said it all dropped on Tidal. The album dropped on Tidal, but the visual premiered on HBO.
So, hang on. I will also interject with an opinion. I remember when this came out because I was like, I am not signing up for Tidal. Don't care. Yeah. I was like, love Beyonce, but I'm just going to have to listen to it when it's out. Because it was like this was during the windowing wars for all the streaming services. And then it came out on HBO and I had it because of all the shows. So I was like, I'll watch it on HBO. But I couldn't go listen to it when it first came out.
No, I couldn't either. And do you want to know what's absolutely insane? I thought the same thing. I was like, I'm not getting Tidal. And I'm not listening to it until it's on a streaming platform I can access. It wasn't on anything else until 2019. And I didn't listen to most of these songs until 2019.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds right.
I knew the big ones, obviously, because like those were on the radio and those were just everywhere, or like the ones that kind of went viral.
Mm-hmm. I didn't either. I don't even know before, honestly, recording this that I actually sat down and like listened. Like, again, it was obviously the singles that I heard, like Sorry and Formation and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I was like, no, I am not. Sorry, Jay-Z. I am not signing up for Tidal. No.
Right. I mean, no thanks.
So, okay, first track up, we kind of just jump into, I call it ice cold water, because with the song Pray You Catch Me, and she wrote this with James Blake and Kevin Garrett, who both of them are like bays.
So good. I mean, they both, Kevin and James both have, their music is like R&B, they're both white guys, first of all, but their music is like R&B influenced, and they have these writing styles that are very spacey and like kind of experimental, I feel.
Yeah, it's not as like, I want to call it synth pop, but it's not as like synth poppy as like a Church's or like a Tame Impala. It's like kind of that songwriter lo-fi.
I feel like it's if Bon Iver was R&B kind of.
Yeah.
But like a little edgier.
Exactly. A little whiter.
Bonnie is white.
Yeah. And he's pasty. He can't get any whiter. But it was, I mean, this song for me, it like kind of slapped me in the face.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, whoa, I didn't realize this was the first song on the album. And I think I was reading about it. Kevin Garrett actually said he was shocked that this made the first track on the album because, you know, Beyonce is just essentially addressing Jay-Z's cheating
right
out the gate.
This chapter is called Intuition, and so this is like a ballad. It's slow. Mm-hmm. It's like very powerful, almost like a gospel-y vocal, I feel like, from Beyonce on this one. And it literally opens up, and the line is, you can taste the dishonesty, it's all over your breath as you pass it off so cavalier.
Ooh, I mean, that boom. Line. Yeah, that and like I thought that it paired really well, like a tasting.
Oh.
Just kidding. But it paired really well with the visual because Beyonce is on this like theater stage all alone. And you're like, this is like not a happy moment. It's not a powerful moment. It's like very sad and eerie and depressing.
Yeah. And I feel like that's like maybe, I mean, I'm sure, I feel like there's a lot of like references you can pull from like being on stage alone, but like part of it is probably like as a performer and as someone who's like in the public eye, you are on a stage and like you do have to be careful about who you open up to about things and who you can vent to and who you can talk to. Like you're kind of alone in it, but you're still in the public eye.
For sure. And she had like a vulnerability here, which I also don't expect from Beyonce, but she almost ends the track with try to be prettier, tried to be softer, try to be prettier, less awake. And I'm like, you are Beyonce.
Less awake.
What? Like, that is also a powerful line because you're like, damn, if Beyonce feels that way, like, that legitimizes my feelings, like, daily.
Yeah, you're like, I am not alone. And, like, for intuition, I mean, this song, women's intuition is a thing. And it is, like, so common that, like, women will just, I mean, and men too, but like, I feel like women's intuition is just something different altogether. You have this gut feeling that like something is wrong or something is happening. And she doesn't say that she's like caught him on anything at this point. And like for her in the chorus, she's like, pray to catch you whispering, pray you catch me listening. So she's like, I almost hope that you just accidentally out yourself so that I can like have justification that like, I'm right.
Right. Which is scary. And I will add to that, I also feel like creatives on another level have this like scary intuition just because of the fields we work in, where they like walk into a room. Yeah. They walk into a room and they're like, what's wrong? Mm-hmm. Why isn't everyone happy? And you're like, no one said one word.
Yeah. You're just like, I feel the energy.
Yeah, exactly. But I also thought, and Lauren, this may be what you alluded to, the voiceover in this is a poem, correct?
Yeah. So kind of throughout the visual album, in between songs, Beyoncé is reading some poems. And most of these poems are from a British and Somalian, I'm pretty sure she is, a poet named Warson Shire. And part of the poem from this one is, I tried to make a home out of you, but doors lead to trapdoors. A stairway leads to nothing. Unknown women wander the hallways at night. Where do you go when you go quiet?
And then she has a line about her dad, mm-hmm. which is, I feel like, almost a bigger slap in the face to Jay-Z. Like, you remind me of my dad.
Yep.
It's like, ooh. Like,
and knowing he, like, Jay knows the relationship.
I was about to say, he's got to feel even worse because he knows that and grew up essentially with Beyoncé. So he's like, that's like a dagger to the heart, I would imagine.
And going back to the whole generational curses thing, the next line is, in the tradition of men in my blood, you come home at 3 a.m. and lie to me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I feel like I've been stabbed.
Yeah, me too.
Been stabbed. It's so good. But also another part of the video. So the first half of it, Beyoncé's on stage,
mm-hmm.
like you were saying, Jay. And then there's another part where she's in this tall grass. And
she's in a hoodie.
She's in a black hoodie, which is a reference to, everyone assumes, Trayvon Martin, who was killed wearing a black hoodie. And part of the chorus, too, it kind of switches. So she says, pray to catch you whispering, pray you catch me listening. And then she goes, pray you catch me, I'm pray you catch me. So it's like a different version of pray. And love that kind of alludes to like two things. One being like the black experience in America, like I'm pray you catch me, but also like maybe like maybe you married me or you were with me as someone you thought you could like pull this over on or something, you know?
Well, and like almost like a relationship, like she's prey as the female mm-hmm. that like Jay-Z was going after, you know, like whatever you call that in the olden times, courting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's like an incredible line.
There, it's every song is so multidimensional. It's insane. And as I was looking through, I hadn't realized, I don't know if anyone has listened to the podcast Dissect, which is a Spotify podcast, but I didn't realize they had actually done, so their podcast, they do a full season on a particular album. So mm-hmm. they'll have an episode for each track. The fact that they can talk about this album for over an hour per track is nuts, but there's that much depth to it.
Yeah. And from everything I've read, Beyoncé has had a hand in every single detail of that. It's not like, again, she was just taking a back seat to it. It was very much her involvement. But this is also a deeply personal album.
Yeah.
You know?
And like none of it is coincidental. Like it's all intentional.
Exactly.
Like Taylor Swift. Like every piece is part of the puzzle on purpose. So next up, the second track is Hold Up, which is such a bop. So the writers on this song, it's obviously Beyoncé, Diplo, Ezra Koenig of The Vampire Weekend, and a few other writers.
Like million writers on this one.
But so the reason why there's so many writers on this album is because each of the almost every single track features a sample or multiple.
Yeah. So she actually features a 1963 sample of Can't Get Used to Losing You, which, so I heard this song and I was like, this sounds familiar, and I couldn't put my thumb on it, but it sounds like a Major Lazer track.
Yeah.
And that makes sense because Diplo's on it.
Right.
Like,
and you were just saying in our last episode how Diplo is like notorious for pulling these like crazy samples.
Yeah, because that's what he did before he like essentially made it as a producer and DJ. So like his library is insane. Like, his knowledge and library is insanely big.
Right. So just to even know to pull this kind of thing is like crazy. And like Ezra from Vampire Weekend, I mean, this honestly, that like drum loop
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it would be. Like a, it sounds like a, what is the African like steel drum?
I know what you're talking about, but I don't know what it's called.
It sounds like that, but that's a very Vampire Weekend sound to me.
Yeah. I mean, and I would, I guess, and I don't know who gets the credit for this, but I would never put the two of them together in a room, but it makes sense on this mm-hmm. track, especially with Beyonce too. But it just, it has like, I don't want to like misuse the word, not a reggae vibe.
No,
but
it totally does.
A little bit of this like Caribbean-esque where I'm like, oh, again, sounds like Major Lazer, but then going into research, I'm like, oh yeah, of course, with Diplo.
It's like Caribbean, but make it like top 40.
Right. And I thought like the visual transition on this was also crazy as well, because mm-hmm. we went from that song from, you know, Pray You Catch Me into this, but like Beyonce's drowning in the interim.
Yeah. So she's like at the end of Pray You Catch Me, suddenly in this room that's full of water. And then like at the start of Hold Up, she opens the doors to this building and the water just spills out and she's wearing the iconic yellow dress that you just know.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's like this sultry yellow dress and you're like, oh, this is Beyonce. Like she's back. She's strutting her stuff. And then she like, you notice she has this baseball bat and you're like, oh, well, what's that?
What's going on here?
And then she just goes to town on Cars.
So this was the third single from the album. Such a radio friendly song, I feel like. And this is one of the songs, this was nominated for Best Pop Solo Performance at the Grammys in 2017. And so when I was researching this, actually, Diplo and Ezra Koenig initially wrote this song in 2014 and created a demo for it with just the track and a chorus. And then Beyonce liked it. And so she was like, I want to take this, but she passed it off to like some different songwriters to see what they would do with it, to see like what kind of vibe she was liking. And so she, oh, this is something else that's crazy. So she sent it to this artist called MNEK, who wrote a full song over the demo. But then Beyonce was like, okay, well, I like these three lines for it from this, but not necessarily the rest. Then passed it along to Father John Misty.
Crazy.
I had no idea.
I did not know that. I just remember looking and I was like, oh, there's a million writers on here. Like the ones I recognize are Ezra and Diplo.
Exactly. I don't even know Father John Misty's real name, so I wouldn't have picked it out of the mm-hmm. songwriters. And so she had heard a Father John Misty song through one of the producers and was like, oh, like let's get him to write on this song. And so Father John Misty.
Hang on. As you do when you're Beyonce. I mean, like, let's just call him up and like, he'll for sure want to like work on this.
Just like any random artist that you hear, you're like, ah, let's give him a call. Let's see. So Father John Misty ended up writing the first verse and the refrain. So the part that's like, they don't love you like I love you is actually, I thought this was interesting. So Ezra Koenig tweeted randomly in like 2013, hold up, they don't love you like I love you. And he was like kind of quoting the song Maps by the Yeah Yeahs. Wait,
they don't
love you like I love you. He was quoting that, but he was like, oh, what if it was just like, if you were actually saying that in real life, you'd be like, hold up, they don't love you like I love you. And that became the demo that he wrote. And
that's crazy.
What's now. So I don't know if the Yeah Yeahs might be credited on this.
I think they are because it said two samples on there. So okay. It has to be. Yeah. Which would make sense on the writing list as well.
Oh, but so here, well, the other sample I think would be Turn My Swag On by Soulja Boy, because in Turn My Swag On, it's the part in the, I think it's the bridge where she says, get my swag on. I look in the mirror, say what's up. That's from that Soulja Boy song.
Oh, so then maybe it is.
Yeah.
But then I don't like who decides like picking all of these parts, because my brain doesn't work like that. I would never think, oh, okay, I'm going to take this part and then this piece over here and we're going to put it all together and it'll sound like dope.
Yeah. And a lot of people have specifically said like that's what Beyonce is good at, because she can pick and like rearrange different pieces and then write her own piece. So I thought that was interesting. Oh, and going back to the visual, when she's walking out in the yellow dress, she opens the doors. Those are the front steps of the Met.
I did not know that.
Shook.
Ooh.
The drama.
Wow.
So we love that. Also, in case anyone was wondering, the yellow dress is Roberto Cavalli. And in that part of the video, after, like you were saying, she has this bat and she's just smashing cars left and right. I mean, iconic. Like, this part of the video is titled Denial. I'm surprised it's not anger. But
right.
But she also is, like, smiling and, like, joyful throughout the video.
But I feel like that's almost, like, an allusion to what she has to do in her public life.
So maybe that's the denial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there was a line in here, I think it was in the poem, but it said, what's worse, looking jealous or crazy? Yeah. And then she, like, gets in the monster truck and just tears over all of these cars.
Yeah. And it's so true. It's like, you're obviously pissed, but you're like, do I go the jealous route and embrace that I'm, like, hurt? Or mm-hmm. do I just go crazy route? And I'm like, you didn't hurt me. I'm just going to, like, F stuff up.
Yeah, exactly. With the baseball bat.
Yeah, exactly.
I did not know. I would be curious. I'm actually going to look it up while we're doing this. No, she wore a Givenchy.
But I would be like, to the Met.
Well, if she wore a Cavalli dress, because she was in black, but still.
Oh, so then throughout the video, people, there are like onlookers on the street and they're all like egging her on. Like, no one's looking at her like, what is this crazy lady doing? They're all just, like, smiling and like, yeah, girl, get it. But then at the very end of the video, Beyonce walks up to a security camera on the street, smiles into it, and smashes it. And everyone's like, that's a reference to, like, the elevator footage, you know?
Right.
But that's a classic one. I feel like when people reference lemonading, like, did you ever watch Kimmy Schmidt? What's the show?
The Incredible Life of Kimmy Schmidt. I watched a couple of episodes and didn't finish the season.
Okay, so there's an episode where Titus gets cheated on and he's like gathering stuff in their him and Kimmy's apartment. And Kimmy's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm doing what any sensible person would do in this situation. I'm lemonading. And then it goes into like him recreating the video for Hold Up with the yellow dress and a bat. It's hilarious.
That's amazing.
Yeah, highly recommend watching.
So she started a cultural movement essentially with that.
I mean, lemonading was turned into a verb.
Right.
Yeah. Like when you're pissed and you're destroying everything in sight because someone hurt you, you're lemonading.
As one does.
Making lemonade out of lemons. Should we go to the next?
Let's do it. Don't hurt yourself.
So Don't Hurt Yourself is a co-write with, I mean, there's several writers on this song, but the major is Jack White.
And Robert Plant. Right. Didn't know he was on it either.
Yeah. So that's obviously from a sample of Led Zeppelin, because this contains a sample of When the Levee Breaks, which also is interesting because that ties into the visual too. A lot of footage from the visual album is like from like post Katrina and a lot of like and it's all set in Louisiana, so it's a lot of like flood footage. So I thought that was interesting, like the tie to those things. But yeah, it's Jack White, Beyonce, Diana Gordon, Robert Plant, James Page, John Paul Jones, and John Bonham. And this is like, this is the rock moment of the record.
Well, I was going to say, this sounds like a White Stripes track.
Totally.
Like when you look up who Jack White's on it, I think he's featured as a vocal and then he like co-wrote it. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh yeah, this sounds like White Stripes.
And Beyonce's voice kind of shifted to match the tone of it. She's like growling and screaming in the song and I live for it.
Also, her outfit, just I liked this visual a lot. It was like she was in a tracksuit, kind of. It was like a sexy tracksuit because she was like in a bra and like workout sweatpants.
Yeah,
but she was like, this was the first time she was like going at the camera. Yes. Which I thought, I don't know if it was done on purpose, but it was very much like, I'm talking to you. Oh, I'm addressing you. And like she has this line where she addresses essentially,
who the F do you think I am?
Yeah. Who the F do you think I am? And she says, don't try this shit again.
Yeah. And also my favorite line, you ain't married to no average bitch boy.
Like, dang, we know Beyonce. We know.
We know, girly.
On the song too, I also liked the big block letters in at the end of it that said, God is God, I am not.
Yeah.
I was like, woof.
Ooh, I almost kind of took that to be like, God will deal with you.
Right.
Like, you are probably worried about me, but you should be worried about God.
And it's like, with the car behind her, and you're just like, think Beyonce's not it's fooling around.
It's a really cool visual. So for this song, Beyonce approached Jack White and was like, I want to be in a band with you. And he was like, okay, well, let's write a song.
But I wonder if this all stems from like the title stuff too, because Jay-Z got, it was, I think, Jason Aldean and Jack White, all of them like agreed to put their music up on Tidal.
Gotcha.
Because it was like this iconic photo. So I'm wondering.
That's probably how they met then. Yeah,
exactly. But like, wow, what a weird position to also be in, to be like, hey, yeah, you're going through this. And I mean, we should say that for all the writers.
Yeah.
Like writing this in 2014, 2015, and then being like, ooh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's like so personal to someone else. I'd be like, oh, this is like stressful. But Jack is also, like, I think notoriously down to collaborate with people, especially people in different genres, which he's so versatile of a writer and producer that it makes total sense. But so Jack said that he gave her a lyrical outline of the song and then Beyonce turned it into what it is now.
I didn't know that.
So it sounds like she wrote the melody and everything, but Jack kind of like generally took control of the lyric and then Beyonce like shifted it and tweaked it, which I love. This chapter is obviously called Anger. And this is the video with the Malcolm X quote about how Black women are the most unprotected people in America. And there are images of like different Black women that are coming across the screen during this portion. Not notable women, just generally.
But I think that's the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like this song a lot. I think it's, you just want to like scream it in the car and like maybe punch a wall, you know?
And I'm also like, I would never want the wrath of Beyonce on me.
Absolutely not. She would kick your butt.
Yeah. Especially after watching that video, I'm like, woo. But I thought it was interesting in terms of sequencing. She has this song and then she goes into Sorry.
I was just going to say for Anger, the end of the quote was, why can't you see me? Everyone else can. Damn. So Sorry. This has become like an anthem. This was the second single.
It was. And I feel like the iconic line is, I ain't sorry.
I ain't sorry. And this is what brought us Becky with the good hair.
It is. I mean, the visual for this one opens with her in a chair, essentially in this house. And she's just like throwing up her hand like, I'm not going to apologize.
Is this the one where they're all with
Serena?
Yeah, Serena.
So Serena Williams is in this as well. And I didn't know why she was in this. Like, obviously, she's a powerful and iconic Black female. But I was still was like, I don't know if she has like an emotional tie to the song or what's up. So she actually did an interview and she knew the director since she was 9.
Oh, interesting.
So she knew Beyonce pretty well as well. So she said they literally were like, we would love for you to be in this particular song. It's about strength. It's about courage. And that's what we see you as. And she was like, okay. And she said, honestly, she got there and she was like, all right, what am I supposed to do? And Beyonce was just like, dance as if no one's watching. And she said the first couple takes were super awkward,
right?
And then she got into it and it turned out like awesome.
This is like one of my favorite parts of the visual album. And so Serena was on the cover of Sports Illustrated sitting in a gold throne in the exact like Black leotard look that Beyonce has. So the visual in the video is basically Beyonce recreating Serena's Sports Illustrated cover.
That makes sense. Which is cool. That's why she's in the chair, just throwing it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, this brought us the phrase boy bye, just in general, too. Like, that's something that people just say so often and, like, rolls off the tongue now. But it's, like boy bye.
Beyonce is also known for, like, adding words to the dictionary. I think it was with Destiny's Child, bootylicious.
Yeah, totally.
Was added to the, it is added as an official word to the dictionary.
As it should be.
But like, that's incredible. And then she's giving us like boy bye, Becky with the good hair, which is, go ahead.
Dude, the Becky with the good hair moment. I feel like that was like, I feel like I'm relating everything to Taylor, but like they really do have such similar paths in their respective ways. But that is like what Taylor's, sorry, I can't come to the phone right now. Why? Because she's dead. Like that was her version of like Beyonce's Becky with the good hair. That is like, you got to that point in the album and you're like, who is Becky? I am Googling every Rachel. Becky that there is.
Rachel
but,
Roy.
But no one had any clue at that point. You're just like, yeah, it's Becky. Like, it's someone named Becky.
And well, and I just remember too, like when it all came out, everyone was like, I mean, her hair is good, but like Beyonce yeah. is Beyonce. She has real good hair.
Yeah, like, right. Like, you know? So funny. Also, at the beginning of this video, there were some iconic quotes from the like poem she was reading. One being, so what are you going to say at my funeral now that you've killed me? Brutal. But then ashes to ashes, dust to side chicks. Iconic.
So good. It is literally so good.
You know that if AIM still existed, like Instant Messenger, that would be like people's away message. Like it would dust be to mine. Dust. Ashes to ashes, dust
I would
to side
cycle
chicks.
Through all of the like poem verses she's used.
Yes.
And just like depending on the month, throw it up.
Oh, totally. Well, and I think it's worth saying too, Warson Shire, the poet, the woman whose poetry is used in most of this visual, her book of poems like sold out immediately.
Oh, of
after
course
this.
It did.
Because I don't think she was like very well known. She was like, I want to say she's like kind of younger. So she's not like been around that long. And so her stuff just like sold out.
Again, I know like we've probably talked about it ad nauseum, but to think of like intertwining this, like these poems into this, like my mind is just blown. Because I just don't think that way.
This video also visually, at the beginning of the video, before the whole like dancing sequence, there's a bunch of black women on with paint on their bodies on a school bus, which is a reference to the Montgomery bus rides, another like important moment in black history. And so this whole video is like really focusing on just the power of womanhood.
Right.
You which- know?
I mean, tying it all together makes sense that Serena's in it.
Totally. So we love Sorry. We stand. Also, this song is certified platinum.
And the album's certified triple platinum, right?
Which is nuts.
I think it sold 1.5 million copies.
Remember? And think about the fact that it was only on Tidal.
I know. Because people were like, I'm not signing up for Tidal. I would rather buy it.
Yeah.
That's why.
True.
So, okay. Should we go into 6 inches?
Let's do it.
So what did you think this song was about? Because I didn't think this song was about what it was about.
I didn't either. I mean, I think a couple things immediately come to mind. They're like, okay, where are we going with this? I think right. My first thought, especially paired with the visual, I was like a 6-inch heel, like a stiletto stripper moment.
See, I didn't. I guess I have a dirty mind and I was like, well, yeah. Oh my gosh. Like she's... Like
just the song title, but then when you hear
right,
you know, it makes sense. Heels.
But like at first, I was a little nervous. I was like, is she about to like do some like?
It's are we about
like,
to have a not safe for work moment on this song?
Right.
Yeah.
And is it about Jay-Z?
Oh gosh, yeah. Right.
Anyway, no, I mean she has this. It's weirdly, I felt like a sexy song.
Oh yeah.
But like, of course, she has The Weeknd on it, whose voice is just like smooth. Butter.
Yeah.
And again, I think it follows well to Sorry because it's about making your own money.
Yeah. And the theme.
Yeah.
Or like the title of this section is emptiness.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the moment like when you imagine like your girlfriend, like your BFF has a bad breakup and like she moves past the stage where she's heartbroken and she's like, I want to go out and like know that people are looking at me and like I'm still desirable and I'm still like a person. That's coming from a place of like needing validation, like you're empty and you need to be filled up. Right. That's kind of this.
It's like your good girlfriend has gone on her diet, has been working out, looks good.
She's like, I'm snatched. I'm ready to go out.
Right. And you're like, oh shit, I'm gonna have to drink coffee for days because this means like out until like 2 a.m.
You're like, I'm happy for you that you're having a moment of feeling confident. I want to be in my sweats, but I'm a good friend. So
right. So I will also
all
be out.
Rally.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess what the theme was, but it makes sense in terms of like this emptiness and also this empowerment where I'm going to go out. I'm going to make my own money to have a house essentially lit on fire. It's like,
yeah,
I'm lighting my past on fire and I'm walking away to like party in my future.
Yeah. It's a lot of like red and fire and flames and like stripper sex worker vibes in the video. That's like what's going on there. I feel like this is like the rebellion chapter.
Yeah.
That's I would rename this as. Well,
in the, I was looking up a lyric. The best part is the opening where she goes, she walked into the club like nobody's business. And you're like, ooh. Like, and again, Lauren, you summed it up perfectly. You know your friends when they walk in and like they have that look in their eye and you're like, oh, this is gonna be a long night.
Yeah, 100%. And the poem for this part is like very, it's a little explicit vibes, which may be like her going out to someone else for physical affection, maybe her being like, okay, you cheated on me, like I'm gonna go do my thing,
right?
Kind of a vibe. That's what I get from the poem. It's very sexual, but very well written. Like it's a beautiful poem, but it's like a little explicit.
And everyone was freaking out about this one, if I remember correctly, because of the producer, Boots. Because I remember when this came out, everyone was like, who is Boots? Boots laid his claim to fame on the self-titled album because everyone was like, who is this Boots guy? And he was like this homeless producer. And then essentially Beyonce plucked him out of oblivion. His real name is Jordan Asher. But I guess he has this incredible story, sleeping in the streets and in his car and washing in like gyms that had open bathrooms. And then is making now tracks with Beyonce. So he's doing pretty well.
Good for him. All right. So next is just a classic among classics, Daddy Lessons. So the co-writers on this one are Winter Gordon, who is a pretty big writer, Beyonce, Kevin Kossom, and Alex Delicata. So this is like the country song among country songs. Like this is the country vibe on the album. It's literally if an R&B artist moved to country, you know?
It is, but it also has a big band New Orleans sound to it, which is like super unique. It's not like your traditional twangy country. It has not, those but elements, but it still has the big band New Orleans,
which I think is like honestly where country music came from. Like I think it was like derivative of that.
Everything's a derivative style. Of New Orleans,
right? Like, of course,
shout out. But I mean, aside from this actual visual, the first thing that pops into my mind when I hear the song is the CMA performance.
Yeah. So this was not originally released with the Chicks on it, but later on was released with the Dixie Chicks at the time as a feature. And they performed it at the Grammys in 2016. Or sorry.
CMAs.
The CMAs in 2016. Do you remember? I don't know if you were on Twitter at this point, but someone on Twitter the day of the CMAs tweeted a picture of a studio or a stage box with Beyonce on it.
So they, I guess the CMAs, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's fine.
No, the CMAs had like a strict no photo policy. And of course, I bet it was like a stagehand or someone loading in because it was clearly on her case and it just had on like pink tape Beyonce and someone tweeted it. And then in typical Nashville form, which Nashville doesn't really care about celebrities because we have country celebrities.
But we don't get a Beyonce that much.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, we don't get Beyonce. And I think someone spotted her in the Gulch, like going to get a juice. Because I remember everyone was like, we are going to the Gulch right now. Oh, she is in the Gulch because I'm sure she jumped across the street to grab something. And like Nashville was ablaze because the CMAs didn't announce it. It was going to be a Dixie Chicks performance.
Yeah. And I think when I first saw that, I was like, I guarantee, like, because at the time we had no link, I don't think, between the Dixie Chicks and Beyonce. I think the Chicks had covered Daddy Lessons like at a show or something like that at one of their shows. But we didn't really have a link between them. And so when I saw that tweet, I was like, surely what happened is someone who was on the crew for her had this, you know, gear and it made its way here. Like, why would Beyonce be at the CMAs in Nashville? Get real. Like, no way. And then she comes out and everyone was freaking out. And the performance was so good.
It was so good. But I feel like it went from a Chicks performance to a Beyonce performance, like hands down.
Of course. This song is like, she's talking about the lessons from her daddy, which in this song she's talking about basically like, her dad taught her to defend herself and stand up for herself. And if that means you resort to violence, then you resort to violence.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a lighthearted theme, but I also thought it was interesting that she ties in like some of her dad's issues too. Like, daddy likes whiskey in his iced tea, that line. And you're like, oh, yeah. Like, you're also alluding to the not so fun sides of your dad.
Yeah, right. And that goes back to like the several references to how that's like a common thread throughout these relationships that she's witnessed. And the poem from this one, it ends with saying, like, it's just this whole descriptive section. And then at the end, she's like, am I talking about your husband or your father? Because like, there's so many parallels. And to me, like, this, the title of this section is accountability. And so to me, I was thinking about like, how when somebody wrongs you, you're like, you have to deal with my parents now. And I'm not going to defend you from them. Like, I'm not going to defend you to them. Like, they're coming after you, you know?
But it's a weird, almost, comparison, because she also compares Jay-Z to her dad earlier.
Well, yeah.
You right. know what I mean? But so it's still, like, it's like, you're my dad. You're like my dad. And now you're going to have to deal with my dad. And yeah. almost like you two are the same. So good luck.
Yeah. Like, have at it. But also it's like, my daddy's going to shoot you. Like, oh, yeah. You hurt his girl. And like, yeah, he's messed up too, but like, he's going to shoot you.
Yeah, you better run.
You better watch out.
I also thought it was interesting and like very pointed when she played the home videos.
I know. I loved that part. It was sweet.
It was sweet, but it was also like, my daddy's going to shoot you like while you're watching these home videos. And you're like, it's cute, but.
Yeah, right. This song is so good. Oh, and also, this is something I was thinking of when I was listening to this. Do you feel like this song paved the way for Lil Nas X? Because I do.
Ish, but I think this song is better than Old Town Road.
No, not comparing songs. I'm saying okay. Paved the way. Gave anyone even the idea that as like an R&B artist, or like urban pop, as they say,
mm-hmm.
to write country and it not be a joke and it not be like laughed at, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Like, I feel like I can't really think of anyone notable who had success with that before this or after until Lil Nas X, really.
I can't either. Honestly, I'm here for it too, especially that he is a gay black male.
Yeah.
That had one of the biggest songs in country music.
Which was like I feel like it was a fusion. Like, I feel like it was not straight up country, but like, was kind of a combination of
totally
a lot of different things. Good on you, Beyonce, paving the way. All right, our next song is Love Drought.
Love Drought.
Ooh, we're singing Love Shack.
Love Shack, baby. Love Drought.
Love Drought is a little place where.
So okay, I feel like we have gone through hell and high water, like all of the emotions. Like the fire, the ice, and we are finally reaching some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes. This is like where it kind of starts to take a turn
mm-hmm.
a bit.
With, and she aptly titled, I guess, the theme for this visual, Reformation.
Yes. So this was co-written by Ingrid Burley, Mike Dean, and Beyonce. Ingrid Burley grew up with Beyonce.
Did not know that.
And was signed to Parkwood Entertainment, which is Beyonce's management company. And so Ingrid allegedly started writing this song on her own and started writing about, she had, I guess, talked to Parkwood about like maybe writing some music for Beyonce, and they lied and said, well, she thought they lied and said that she wasn't working on new music, when in actuality, she was writing songs for this record. And she found out that she actually was writing songs for this record. And so she started writing the line that says, 10 times out of 9, I know you're lying, but 9 times out of 10, I know you're trying. So she actually started writing it about not a relationship. And then it obviously evolved from there. This song is beautiful.
No, I mean, I thought it was beautiful. The song itself is beautiful, but I also thought the juxtaposition of the title, Love Drought, and then Beyonce is next to the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Like being baptized in it, basically.
Right. But that's the opposite of a drought, because there's plenty of water. So I thought that like those two visuals were awesome in terms of the song and then the actual visual.
Yeah.
I had the themes of light and rebirth And mm-hmm. and one of the lines that like kind of stuck out to me, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. We're like turning the corner, because even the visuals get lighter. It's not like dark and fiery.
Yeah.
Was now that reconciliation is possible.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, Beyonce saying like, this is feasible for my relationship or with my husband.
Yeah. And the chorus is, you and me can move a mountain. And it's like, clearly the mountain is like fixing this relationship. But she's like, it's possible. If we both like put in the work, we can do it.
Right.
And the poem from this section of the visual is, why do you deny yourself heaven? Why do you consider yourself undeserving? Why are you afraid of love? You think it's not possible for someone like you, but you are the love of my life. So then it's like her almost having like healed herself. And then she's coming back. She's now seeing it from a different lens. Like, you're the one who's actually broken. And like, now I feel bad for you because you clearly think that you're unworthy of love to like do this, you know?
Right. Well, and it's almost like addressing, which I didn't realize this later, like Jay-Z talks about some of his personal issues that he experienced growing up very poor in Brooklyn and all of that, that like tends to lead to some behavior. Now, I know that that's up for speculation, that he's like, oh, I mean, he's just covering his lying ass. But I think that it sounds like they did therapy and mm-hmm. now she's recognizing some of his issues and flaws and being like, I love you and you're going to have to accept that I love you.
Yeah.
No matter what you do to try to like push me away, even cheat.
Yeah, totally. This song is gorgeous. This is one of the ones that like I have a new appreciation for now hearing it. I'm like, this didn't get the hype it deserved, I feel.
No, it's a sleeper.
Yeah, it's slow. I mean, it's pretty mellow, but
that's why you love it.
But it's beautiful. I love her vocal is like very angelic, which is like totally fitting for like the fact that they're being baptized in the water and like washed clean. It all fits together.
Which I think was a perfect segment into Sandcastles. And I think this is like going out on a limb, but after watching this visual again, I think it was my favorite.
It's a good
one. From the album. Even maybe one of my favorite songs, because I didn't think about Sandcastles, which like are very sturdy until they get washed away by the ocean,
mm-hmm.
which is like what she's alluding to in a bit of a metaphor. And then I also love all artists at their most vulnerable and raw. Like,
yeah.
I think that showcases their talent the best. And this is literally Beyonce at a piano with like headphones and a computer.
In what looks like a bedroom.
Exactly.
Very intimate.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I feel like, again, this showcased her vocal and I was like, man. It showcased probably the vocal of the song more so than other songs did for me, because I was like distracted. There was like, she was dancing and there was fire and all of this, which I know like fit cohesively, but this was like, you're going to pay attention to what's going on in this song.
Yeah, it was simpler.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like her voice is like soft in this song, but it's also, it has moments of being so gravelly and like gritty.
Well, it's almost like she's crying.
Yeah.
In the song, which is also very powerful.
The title of this section is Forgiveness. And this blurb from the poem literally is so beautiful. So it says, baptize me now that reconciliation is possible. If we're going to heal, let it be glorious. Do you remember being born? Are you thankful for the hips that cracked, the deep velvet of your mother and her mother and her mother? There is a curse that will be broken. Going back to that generational curse. It's so good. It just, all the pieces fit together so beautifully. As we go into our next song, our next one is Forward.
So I count this as like an interlude.
Yeah, it's very short.
Yeah, it's only like a minute and 19 seconds, I think.
This is another one written with James Blake and performed with James Blake on this one. The title of this section is Resurrection. And this part of the visual was super powerful. It featured the mothers of Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, and Eric Garner holding photos of their sons. And obviously it was very emotional, and I think goes back to the whole experience of being Black in America and treated as less than. And Forward, it's like we're trying to break that
and literally move forward.
Yeah. And this video also had Chloe and Halle, who were so young.
Wait, I did not. They were in this?
They were in it, yeah. They were. There was a crowd outside the plantation, I think, that they were at, of like, okay, a bunch of women in like antebellum style dresses, and Chloe and Hallie were in the front.
Wow.
I mean, they had to have been like 12.
Yeah, they were babies. They looked
like they were like 12. And then at the very end of this, speaking of babies, was a baby Blue Ivy, a video of her, which I don't know if she, if they had shown photos or videos of her at this point.
They did. She was in another visual because she was like coming down the stairs.
Oh,
and
okay.
They had like a couple of like small children. So she was in it. And I can't remember which one it was, but she was in it.
Okay.
Again, that's also interesting to have. And I feel like that's another theme we haven't really touched on. But like, Beyonce had a young child at this time, mm-hmm, while she was dealing with the affair stuff.
Yeah. Which is sad. And like, yeah, adds an additional layer of a hard time.
Totally.
So going from Resurrection into Hope, our next song is Freedom.
Featuring Mr. Kendrick Lamar.
Ooh. This was nominated for Best Rap Sung Performance at the 2017 Grammys. I don't think that it won that category, but this is arguably, I think, one of Beyonce's most political songs. It especially, I think, in the year of 2020, kind of had a resurgence as everyone was really focused on the Black Lives Matter movement and were using this as one of like the greatest protest songs that we have. You know, it's a powerful song.
But I feel like it's also pertinent to this past year in 2020, especially the line, and I had to look it up, but it's, "Don't move. I'm a riot. I'm a riot through your borders. Call me bulletproof."
Oof.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, with everything going on politically and socially in the United States right now, I feel like this song is more pertinent than it ever was, even, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah. And like, the hope is that this art changes things and that like focusing on putting forth effort and like doing something changes things, both in like the political realm, but also like in the relationship. It's like, it's not going to fix itself. Like, you've got to like break free of the things that are causing pain and hurt.
And I think this is probably where she got the title for the album, because the last line is, "I was served lemons, but I made lemonade."
Yeah. And we'll kind of get to a little more detail on that information too. So then going into All Night, this is another one that was co-written with Diplo and several other people. Oh, this is special note for you. Guess who was a co-producer and sang background vocals
on All Night? Who?
Your boy King Henry. Isn't that crazy?
Dude.
I was like, what?
He is the man. Shout out to King Henry and Sasha Slim.
We stan.
We stan.
So this song samples, I am not even going to try to say the song title, but an Outkast song. The horns are the sample in the chorus. The lyric I love from this song is, "Our love was stronger than your pride. Beyond your darkness, I'm your light." I loved that. This is just like, you weren't too proud to like fix it. And like, our relationship is more important than being embarrassed by what you did. Like, we can move past it. So this section is called Redemption. This is actually the one where in the visual, the poem that's read speaks about a grandmother, and it's a long piece, so I won't bore you with reading it. I mean, not bore you, it's beautiful, but like, it's long. But the grandmother, it's like talking about the grandmother and generational curses, and then goes into a video of Jay-Z's grandmother at her like 92nd birthday party or something, reading a quote talking about like her hardships in life, and literally says, "I was served lemons, but I made lemonade." So that's where the line comes from,
which is awesome. And again, also has to sting a little bit if you're Jay-Z, just to watch all of that.
Oh yeah. Well, and you're like, now my wife has not only titled her album, but used it as a line in a song, and used these words from my grandma's mouth that she's saying, like I'm the one that gave her the lemons that she had to turn into lemonades. That's rough.
Ooh. I didn't even think about it like that. But yeah, your own husband gave you lemons. Not good.
It's not good. Yeah, that's really all I have to say about that. I mean, Diplo, I just can't help but stan Diplo. Like,
okay, hear me out. I stan Diplo because I stan his sampling.
Yeah, totally.
I know that's like an obvious thing, but like, who knows? He may not be Diplo without that, but I'm just saying, like, he's great because of that.
Yeah, like, that's what he's good at. But he also, and I think we talked about this on the last episode, but he just has such a good ear for like things that are not only good and cool, but like what's going to be cool by the time that song comes out. Mm-hmm. And then even still, it's like kind of ahead of the curve still.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like the fashion designers. It's like they have to know what's going to be on trend a year from now, if not beyond. So it's like he kind of is that same way with music, I feel like.
And to get two tracks on a Beyonce record, I think is saying a lot.
Yeah.
At least from her perspective as well.
It's lit, as the kids say.
Litty. All right. So
well, technically that was the last chapter from the visual album. Mm-hmm. And because Beyonce had already released Formation as a single and as a video separately, they kind of added that on to the end, if that makes sense. But so then we have Formation, arguably the largest song from the record.
But I also feel like it weirdly fits.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. We're full circle, but now she's addressing like the fans and y'all get in Formation. Because I took you on this journey. We're back and I'm like Queen Bee. So get in line. Let's go.
Yeah. So this was obviously the lead single. As we said, it was Google's most searched song of 2016. I thought that was interesting. Not surprising, but interesting.
And it has some very quotable lines.
Oh, this song gave me so much life. Like, so many of these lines, I still, like, hot sauce in my bag, swag, that hit me. Like, as someone who is very passionate about hot sauce, I was like, girl, same.
It's because both of you are from Louisiana. It's true. Like, it's true. You guys are very serious about your hot sauce.
And always stay gracious, best revenge is your paper. Put that on my tombstone, babe.
Yes.
Put it on my tombstone.
I was listening to this again in the car and I was like, I want like a tattoo, or I want that as like my, I want that as my email signature from now on.
Oh, love that. Absolutely love that.
I want it as my out of office and email signature.
No, like if we had like just yearbook quotes for like regular life, like that would be mine.
Right.
Yeah. I love that.
And then dare I say the most notable one, when he F me good, I'd take his ass to Red Lobster. Can I say
Yeah.
Yeah. So you actually told me this fun fact that I did not know, but tell the people, Lauren.
Okay. So the mention of Red Lobster in this song increased sales at the restaurant by 33%. And the chain was tweeted about over 42,000 times in the first hour and trended for the first time in history. Red Lobster was like, thank you, Beyonce.
she's got like a lifetime membership, like a free dining card to Red Lobster anytime she frequents it, which is probably never. Yes. But I can't imagine being so powerful that you move sales of a corporate company from putting that line in your song.
33%. That's a big amount for like nationwide.
Right. I mean, we're getting into like Kylie Jenner territory when she like tweeted about Snapchat.
Yeah.
And right. it was just like, whoa.
It's nuts how much powerful. Yeah. How much influence you really do have. So this song was nominated for Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best Music Video at the 2017 Grammys. It only won Best Music Video, I'm assuming, because song and record went to our girl Adele, as we said earlier.
Which, it's also funny you mentioned the Grammys. I didn't bring this up while we were talking about the song, but I didn't realize that she actually did Love Drought and did a recreation in 2017 on the chair, because I remembered watching that performance and I was like, why is she on a chair like that?
Wait, which chair?
It was the chair that went up and down, like on the table. So it's like you see it in the visual album. There's like a person on a chair, but in the actual Grammy performance, she goes up and down, which brings it full circle because she was pregnant with twins.
Oh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Vaguely, yeah. Yeah. I need to go back and watch that.
Yeah, it was crazy because she also looked like she was about to give birth. So everyone was like tweeting, is Beyonce about to give birth on this table?
That's so funny.
But it was a reference to the visual album, which I just connected the two we were doing this.
Also, the opening line to this song is iconic. Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess, because it's like
Jay-Z.
Well, and it was like such a conspiracy theory that they are involved with Illuminati, and I feel like it's like QAnon vibes. But I thought that was funny that she addressed it, because obviously it's like such a talked about, or was such a talked about thing up until now, but her to just like make a joke about it, I did think was funny.
It's just like, I don't know, because at his shows he's like, you throw up the Illuminati, yeah, which, you know what I mean,
that
it's
creeps
like,
me out, I'm sorry, it does,
yeah, but it's like you throw up a symbol to him, so I feel like she's addressing that. But then further down she goes, I'm so possessive, I rock his rock necklaces, like, yeah, as in Rock Nation necklaces, yeah. And you're like, ooh, she's back. Like, this gave me major Destiny's Child, I'm a Survivor, totally, like, vibes.
Also, this song brought us the phrase, I slay all day, which literally was on every Basic Bee t-shirt you could found in
and
any
mug,
boutique.
And yes. Mug. Like, everyone had it for their morning coffee. It was just...
It's like, literally, your banker is like, I slay all day. You're like, sis, do you, though? Like, just because Beyonce said it, yeah. I don't know if that applies
do
to
I
everyone.
Need to go to another bank and switch my funds?
Okay, wait. Also, did you see... So, SNL did a sketch... about this right after this song, this single came out, and the sketch was called The Day Beyonce Turned Black. Literally in the video.
I did not see it.
Oh, it's so funny. You have to watch it. Well, like, I'll share something on our Instagram. But so everyone's like watching the news. All the white cast members are like watching the news, and it's like this announcement, and it's like, Beyonce's black, and everyone's like, oh my God, Beyonce is black. Like, this is nuts. And like the whole joke is that like Beyonce's always been black, and yet suddenly after this song came out, like, it was called, like, a critic from Los Angeles Times said it, called it like a statement of radical black positivity, like it very was like black empowerment, and people were so uncomfortable about that. All of a sudden the joke obviously from SNL is like, she's always been black, babe, like literally always.
But she got flack, like, I'm not defending anyone saying this, but she did get flack. And it was like throughout her career, I think, for like essentially having like fake hair. I remember that was a thing at one point, because they were like, oh, if she's black, like she would rock a fro, like Solange rocks,
yeah,
a fro.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And like it was a thing when I think she was in cornrows in one scene, and they were like, Beyonce doesn't wear cornrows on,
right,
the reg.
And that was like kind of part of the joke too, is like she has been in the media at, mm-hmm, least kind of whitewashed.
Right.
By us, not by herself. Like,
right,
she's just being herself.
She's being her. Yeah.
But yeah, that was like the joke, is like suddenly because she's like talking about her heritage and like wearing her hair in braids, like suddenly everyone's like terrified. It's like everyone needs to relax. But the sketch is so funny.
I need to watch it.
Yeah. In the video, this also is one of the most iconic looks from this record, I feel like.
This is with the car.
Maybe,
right?
Well, she's standing outside with the long braids, the black hat, black dress, and like chunky big silver necklaces.
I thought she was in the car at one point during this, but I could be wrong.
No, she probably is.
It's like her in the coat, but she's in the braids in the car, I think, like hanging out the window. You know what I'm talking about?
Kinda. I would love to see like a slideshow of how this influenced fashion for like the following year, because
oh,
I feel
I'm
like
sure
it had
insane.
To have. Because she was like wearing sportswear. She was wearing like yellow, like bright yellow. I wonder if that like created a trend for yellow. The braids and like the chunky silver jewelry.
Sure. If Red Lobster had their sales increase, I'm pretty sure she influenced fashion.
No, totally.
But wait, Lauren, so before we wrap this up, I feel like we should also mention the 2018 Coachella performance. Because she did a lot of the songs from this record, and it was one of the most iconic performances.
Yeah.
And it translated live. Like, I didn't watch it live. I think they live streamed it and I didn't watch it, but I remember the internet being like, what was that? Because she did it with a band, mm-hmm, and it was insane.
And then they put that on Netflix, I think in 2019, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I think it won like an Emmy. Or something.
Yeah. And supposedly it had more viewers than, because she was supposed to play it in 2017. Then she had the kids, the twins. So then it had more viewers when they released the actual video, like in 2019, than Coachella at that time when they were live streaming. So like, if you're Ariana Grande, you're like, really? You had to release it now?
Seriously? No,
cool.
That's true. That was an iconic performance. And I read somewhere that she had a goal of performing every one of these songs live at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So she did play a lot of them in that performance. And I thought it was really cool. Did you watch the Netflix?
Yeah, I did.
So I thought it was cool how they filmed both performances. And she was wearing, like, I think a pink outfit in one and a blue in the other. And they, like, mixed the two performances of each song. So it was, like, shots from, like, the two different days, but they combined it into...
Oh, that's cool.
It was really cool. I was so confused of what was happening when I was watching it because I didn't realize it was two different days, like, two different performances. Oh,
I think I probably just thought it was a costume change, like, every single time and didn't think twice. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because I was like, oh, it's Beyonce for sure.
Everyone knows this, but, like, she's just such an incredible performer. I don't understand how she dances the way that she does and sings the way that she does at the same time.
Yeah. And I know I've mentioned this on a prior podcast, but I will say it again as well. I did go to the Carter's tour. She outperforms Jay-Z like 1,000%.
That's because girls rule and boys drool.
I mean, literally, she is dancing, jumping, twirling her hair. Oh, and also singing live. You can tell because she's breathing into the mic and Jay-Z is just like walking around, like, you know, rapping into the mic. Yeah, exactly. And you're like, what are you doing? Like, it's probably not a good decision for you career wise to perform next year.
Stand up to her. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's true. So I think we should kind of generally talk about just like the impact that this record has had on music. And I read somewhere that like a critic said that this has like Lemonade revived the album format in an era dominated by singles and streaming. And it's so true because especially at that time, like streaming was king and like the art form of a complete album as like a concept and like a complete piece of work had kind of gotten lost for the most part. And so having something like this where A, it was a visual, so you had to watch it start to finish, and B, like each song spoke to the next. It's so true that it like really did kind of revive that format a bit.
I agree with that. I would also argue, like from a devil's advocate perspective, I don't know that many artists can do that unless you're at the level that Beyonce is, because your fans will listen to it all the way through. The same way as Taylor.
Yes, but whether people are listening to it or not, like creating something that like all works together,
like a storybook,
is just not something that people do. And I think if they did, people would listen to a full record because it all would kind of be different pieces to the same puzzle.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, these are 12 really great songs that don't matter.
Right.
To one another.
Well, and like we've talked about it as well. It's like people are chasing radio hits. So they just put everything on there that they think is going to be a radio hit. And it's like just splattering paint against the wall and kind of seeing what sticks. And you're like, what is this?
Yeah, totally.
And I mean, to Beyonce's credit, like she was going through a lot personally, very publicly. And Jay-Z was too, because he had his record come out shortly after the 444, and he addressed his mom being a lesbian and like all of his cheating. And essentially it was like his answer to hers. I would say it wasn't as big.
And no,
I was
definitely like, not.
Dude, we know. We listened to Lemonade, but
we already heard the story.
Exactly.
But this album also was like an important piece of work that like pushed the rules of genre too.
Mm-hmm.
It had rock. It had hip hop. It had reggae. It had R&B, it had gospel, it had country, like literally a little bit of everything.
Yeah, which is incredible, again, for all of it to work in that cohesive manner.
Yeah.
Because if you told me all of those sounds would be together, I'd be like, those are awesome separately, but I don't see them all on one album.
Yeah. And just like going back to how much we've talked about, like how many layers are in this, I think you had actually told me this before, but there are like 20 plus colleges that have courses specifically dedicated to Beyonce, but some specifically to Lemonade and like dissecting it in reference to Black history and like American culture.
Yeah. I definitely didn't tell you about that one. There is a full class at Georgetown dedicated to Jay-Z.
Maybe that's
the art of like hustling essentially and how he came out of poverty to be a music mogul. They also talk about like his prophetic way with words, which is kind of insane that these two people have essentially the same skill in such a powerhouse form. And of course they're married. You know what I mean?
It kind of makes sense though, because like, to have your brain operate in such a way, I don't understand how you could relate to anyone who wasn't also like that. So it kind of makes sense that they found each other and they're like, you're the only person on my level.
Well, and I would like pay so much money if they would just record them talking about like listening to demos and being like, what do you think of this? Because, you know, to that point, the other person's going to be like, well, I would move this, this and this here and turn this down, turn this up, like blah, 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 blah. And it'd probably like make my head explode.
If they started a podcast, goodbye, my free time. I would listen to it nonstop.
Okay, well, we would be out of business. So.
No, we wouldn't. We would be listening to it. Everyone else would have to listen to us.
Jay and Beyonce, you can be on our podcast. Oh my God,
we would love to have you. Email us at themusicbuzzpodcast@gmail.com.
Like and subscribe if you're listening, please.
5-star review. Well, thank you guys for like listening to this breakdown. We hope you learned something. And we hope you enjoyed this. And if you have any other albums that you want to hear us break down track by track, hit us in those DMs on Instagram at musicbuzzpod.
Also, if you really liked this episode, hit us with a yellow heart in the comments. Shout out to Mark and Jake, who like said that they needed a shout out. We hope you're listening. We'll find out if you were listening. We know you're Beyonce fans. That's it.
All right, guys, we will see you next time on the Music Buzz. Stay buzzed.